This is VOA News via remote. I'm Marissa Melton. The Biden administration is sending Ukraine a small number of advanced rocket systems. AP correspondent Ben Thomas reports.
Ukrainian leaders have been begging for the high-tech medium-range rocket systems as they struggle to stall Russian progress in the Donbas region. The systems are part of a new $700 million tranche of U.S. security assistance that tries to strike a balance between helping Ukraine battle the ferocious Russian artillery barrages in the east while not providing weapons that could allow Ukraine to hit targets deep inside Russia. Two senior administration officials tell the AP the current package also includes helicopters, Javelin anti-tank weapon systems, tactical vehicles, and spare parts. Ben Thomas, Washington.
Russia relentlessly shelled Severodonetsk in eastern Ukraine on Wednesday, with the Luhansk regional governor conceding that Moscow's forces now control 70% of the city and that evacuation of civilians has been halted. Some Ukrainian troops were still fighting against the Russian onslaught, Luhansk Governor Serhiy Haidai said, but others had retreated. But Haidai said that Lysychansk, the only other city in the Luhansk region not taken by Russia or Moscow-backed separatists, remains fully under Ukrainian control. The battle for Severodonetsk remains crucial for Russia's aim to take control of Ukraine's industrialized Donbas region in the eastern part of the country. It failed to capture the capital, Kyiv, earlier this month in its three-month offensive to topple the government of President Volodymyr Zelensky. If Russia were to capture Severodonetsk and its smaller twin, Lysychansk, on the west bank of the Seversky-Donetsk River, it will hold all of Luhansk. This is VOA News. The Uvalde, Texas, police chief says he's cooperating with the investigation into last week's deadly school shooting. AP correspondent Mike Hempen reports.
Uvalde Consolidated Independent School District Police Chief Pete Arredondo tells CNN he's talking daily with investigators. That contradicts claims from state law enforcement that he has stopped cooperating. The chief communications officer with the Texas Department of Public Safety said Tuesday Arredondo had not responded to DPS requests for 2 days. State officials have said that 19 police officers waited outside the classroom where Salvador Ramos had opened fire, despite repeated pleas from children calling 911 for help. I'm Mike Hempen.
A woman injured in a mass shooting on a New York City subway in April is suing gun manufacturer Glock. AP correspondent Julie Walker has that story.
Authorities say a 9mm Glock semi-automatic handgun was used in the attack. In her lawsuit filed Tuesday, Eileen Stower said Glock endangered the public health and safety with the marketing, distribution, and sales of its guns. 10 people were wounded in that shooting. Meanwhile, New York City is exploring gun detectors, with the mayor considering technology used to scan large numbers of people quickly for weapons, like at sports stadiums and theme parks. But security experts say the personnel needed at every single subway entrance is prohibitive. Julie Walker, New York.
Iran's foreign minister said Wednesday it will respond to any, in its words, unconstructive action at the upcoming IAEA Board of Governors meeting. The United States, France, Britain, and Germany are pushing for the United Nations Nuclear Watchdog's Board of Governors to rebuke Iran for failing to answer long-standing questions on uranium traces at undeclared sites. This is according to a draft resolution prepared for an upcoming meeting, seen by Reuters. Myanmar's military, which seized power in a coup last year, blamed opposition terrorists on Wednesday, that's the term they use, for a deadly bombing at a bus stop on Tuesday in Yangon. Members of the exiled government denied involvement and blamed the military. The blast left at least one person dead and several others wounded. A second fatal bomb blast occurred Tuesday at an education office in eastern Myanmar. Myanmar has seen the scene of much unrest since a military coup in February of 2021 led to nationwide protests and violent crackdowns on them by government forces. Some 1,400 people have been reported killed. Recapping our top story this hour, the Biden administration is sending Ukraine a small number of advanced rocket systems. Via remote, I'm Marissa Melton. You're listening to VOA News.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wahib in Washington, and here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
As a country, we need to appreciate that maintaining the death penalty serves very little purpose. The solution, therefore, lies in rehabilitating offenders while delivering justice and maintaining life imprisonment.
That was Godfrey Malembeka, Executive Director of the Prisons Care and Counseling Association, on Zambia's decision to end the death penalty. Details coming up. Also, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said in a statement today that Ambassador Mike Hammer, a career diplomat with decades of experience, has replaced Jeffrey Feltman as the U.S. Special Envoy for the Horn of Africa. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. A clergyman of Nigeria's Methodist Church has revealed the church paid a ransom of nearly $250,000 for the release. For his release, gunmen abducted the prelate Sunday while he was traveling in Nigeria's southeastern Abia state. The payment comes as Nigeria's president is expected to sign a bill punishing those who pay ransoms with up to 15 years in prison. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja, Nigeria.
The prelate of the Methodist Church of Nigeria, Samuel Kanu Uche, made the announcement while briefing journalists in Lagos on Tuesday, soon after his release. He had been received by a cheering crowd of church members and immediately held prayers of the church before the briefing. Kanu Uche said the church paid about $240,000 as ransom to his abductors to secure his freedom and that of the two pastors traveling with him. Eight armed men ambushed them on their way to the airport in Abia State on Sunday, shooting sporadically at their vehicle before taking them hostage. The clergyman's driver and one other church member escaped the assault. Kanu Uche said the kidnappers showed them the rotted bodies of previously kidnapped victims who could not raise ransom payments and threatened to do the same with him. Nigerian authorities have yet to comment on his release, but officials have repeatedly objected to paying ransom for kidnapped victims, saying the payments make the abductors more powerful. Archbishop Chibuzo Okpoko heads the Methodist Church in Abia State. He says paying the ransom was necessary.
They would not have released them if that was not done. It wasn't the security that intervened.
How effective would that law be when security agencies are not doing their best?
What is the law for those who kidnap and demand for ransom?
Armed groups and criminals have kidnapped hundreds, possibly thousands of people for ransom across Nigeria over the last 2 years. UNICEF says the number includes at least 1,500 students abducted in north central and northwestern Nigeria since late 2020. In an effort to curb the abductions, the Nigerian Senate recently approved legislation that would punish ransom payments with up to 15 years imprisonment. The bill would also punish kidnapping with a death sentence if the abductee dies in custody. Rights groups and families of kidnapped victims continue to protest the measure. Among them is Abdul Fatai Jimo, a spokesperson for the families of passengers kidnapped from a train in Kaduna State in late March.
It's an abnormal bill. Abnormal in the sense that in a country where such a bill can exist, it would be a country that has a law in place that where anybody is kidnapped, that person must be rescued within 48 hours. Without anything like that in place, there's no way that can stop anybody from paying ransom.
Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari has yet to say whether he will sign the bill into law. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said in a statement today that Ambassador Mike Hammer, a career diplomat with decades of experience, has replaced Jeffrey Feltman as the U.S. Special Envoy for the Horn of Africa. Hammer will have to contend with multiple crises in the region, including conflict in Ethiopia that has sparked accusations of atrocities on both sides and economic and political turmoil in Sudan following an October coup. Blinken said the appointment underscores the abiding U.S. commitment to diplomatic efforts in the region, most urgently in support of an inclusive political process towards peace, common security, and prosperity for all the people of Ethiopia. But Reuters reported that the frequent change of personnel has raised questions about the Biden administration's commitment to the region, particularly as it grapples with pressing foreign policy crises elsewhere, primarily the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Tensions are surging between the Democratic Republic of Congo and Rwanda, with the two neighbors swapping allegations that they're supporting separate rebel groups in the volatile eastern DRC. Eugene Wimana has more from Rwanda's capital, Kigali.
Continental groups, including the African Union, have been trying to foster reconciliation before the situation explodes into full-on conflict that could spread. African Union Chairman Macky Sall said Sunday he's gravely concerned about the situation and called for calm and dialogue. After a phone call from Angola President João Lourenço to DRC President Félix Tshisekedi, Kinshasa agreed to release two Rwandan soldiers who Kigali says were abducted by the Congolese army. Rwandan Foreign Minister Vincent Biruta, attending an African Union summit in Equatorial Guinea, urged the DRC to de-escalate its rhetoric so that they can all continue collaboration to restore security and long-term stability to their region. More than 100 rebel groups are active in the eastern DRC, where recent fighting has displaced entire communities. Rwanda alleges the DRC is working with the FDLR rebel group there. This follows a declaration made in a news conference yesterday by the Ministry of Foreign Affairs that Rwanda is ready to retaliate against what they called DRC aggression. While addressing the United Nations Security Council, Rwandan Ambassador Claver Gatete asked member states and the UN peacekeeper force MONUSCO to break up what he called an alliance between the Congolese army and the FDLR.
Rwanda is extremely concerned by the military cooperation between FRDC and FDLR. This council should be reminded that the presence of FDLR has caused untold suffering to the people of Eastern DRC and perpetrated insecurity in our region for close to 3 decades. We urge the United Nations through MONUSCO to not stand by and watch this alliance between FRDC and FDLR continue.
The FDLR, or the Democratic Forces for the Liberation of Rwanda, is led by the genocide perpetrators who fled Rwanda in 1994. Meanwhile, the DRC government accuses Rwanda of backing the M23 rebel group. That militia is blamed for dozens of deaths in recent weeks. Gatete denied those allegations.
In conclusion, I would like to state that Rwanda categorically rejects the allegations by DRC that Rwanda supports M23. This is unfounded and unacceptable. Rwanda has absolutely no interest in destabilizing DRC. The government of Rwanda observes that these allegations are a pretext by some spoilers within the DRC to externalize the conflict for domestic political gains, which is dangerous and should be denounced.
The Rwandan military says fighting between M23 and the DRC army led to DRC rockets falling in some neighborhoods of the Musanze district and destroyed properties. In a news conference, Biruta said Rwanda is ready if aggression continues. He says if these insecurity incidents continue, they cannot sit and allow that their citizens continue get shot or abducted. He says they have the right to defend their territory, and if attacks continue, they can retaliate. But he says Rwanda doesn't need a war and stands ready should anyone want it. For political analyst Patrick Muneza, the solution is clear for both countries. Stop cooperating with the rebel groups.
The solution, my point of view, is to release the Rwandan soldiers and then they declare that DRC is not working with the FDLR. But surely this is going to handcuff the regional integration we're all being optimistic about, which is going to affect the economy and the politics. And this is really a setback, a major setback.
The DRC, Rwanda, and the three other Eastern African nations agreed last month to form a regional force that will fight armed groups in the region. Eugene Uwimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
a UN peacekeeper, was killed and three others injured today in a terrorist attack on their convoy in Kidal, northern Mali. MINUSMA, the United Nations Multidimensional Integrated Stabilization Mission in Mali, said the casualties were members of the mission's Jordanian contingent. MINUSMA spokesman Oliver Salgado tweeted that the convoy was hit by small arms fire and rocket-propelled grenades in an attack that lasted about an hour. No details were given about the suspected attackers. MINUSMA was deployed in 2013 to help shore fragile Sahel state in the face of jihadist attacks. With 13,000 members, the mission is one of the UN's biggest peacekeeping operations and also one of its most dangerous. It says 172 troops have died from hostile acts. The announcement by Zambian President Hakainde Hichilema on abolishing the death penalty has been received with excitement and high expectations by human rights activists. The government will now work with Parliament to transition to focusing on preserving and rehabilitating life while still delivering justice. Kathy Short reports from Lusaka.
There is a growing consensus worldwide for the abolition of the death penalty. Though Zambian law supports the punishment, no executions have taken place since the late 1990s. Godfrey Malembeka is the executive director of the Prisons Care and Counseling Association, an NGO that focuses on the welfare of prisoners. Malembeka insists that the death penalty is inhuman and not in line with fundamental human rights.
As a country, we need to appreciate that maintaining the death penalty serves very little purpose. Studies have shown that the death penalty is not an effective deterrent as a country that have it still see cases that attract the death penalty. And countries where they have abolished death penalty, the crime wave is going down. The solution, therefore, lies in rehabilitating offenders whilst delivering justice and maintaining life imprisonment.
Boniface Chembe is the executive director of the Southern African Center for the Constructive Resolution of Disputes, a human rights NGO. Chembe has called on the Zambian government to act urgently and repeal the law that supports the death penalty.
We hope that the pronouncements that have been made will be followed up to their logical conclusion, go hand in hand with what is contained in our laws by way of repealing and removing from the statute books the issue of the death penalty, which is a gross human rights violation that must not be condoned and accepted in a democratic dispensation such as ours that believes in the right to life for all.
However, Joseph Mambwe, a Lusaka resident, insists that the death penalty should be maintained as it helps grieved families bring a psychological closure and also reduces crime.
It is a relief to the grieved family if they know that the person who killed or murdered their brother, their father, mother has also been killed or has also been sentenced to death.
Besides amending the law, human rights activists are also asking Zambia to relaunch the constitutional reforms that would expand the Bill of Rights that would include the end of the death penalty. The procedure would require a two-thirds majority in Parliament. The acting Minister of Home Affairs and Internal Security, Ambrose Lifuna, says the government has started discussions toward ending the death penalty. I'm Kathy Short for VOA News in Lusaka, Zambia.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. And please note we have moved our programs from voanews.com to voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voaafrica.com. Guinea's ruling junta has rejected a UN call to lift a ban on political demonstrations. According to the French news agency AFP, the military, which were overthrown by President Alpha Condé in September last month, declared the ban on public demonstrations before a return to civilian rule, which it says will be in 3 years. The National Front for the Defense of the Constitution, a coalition that led months of anti-Condé protests in 2019 and 2020, issued a statement on social media accusing the junta of showing a dictatorial attitude. It called on the public to mobilize for the imminent resumption of peaceful and civil demonstrations to prevent the confiscation of power and demand a swift return to public order. The junta is made up of army officers led by Colonel Mamadi Doumbouya. Its plan for a 3-year transition period is in defiance of regional partners in the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS. The West African bloc suspended Guinea's membership after the coup and in March warned of economic and financial sanctions if the junta snubbed an appeal for a shorter transition period. Nigerian manufacturers say they are struggling with rising grain prices, especially for wheat, sparked by Russia's war on Ukraine. But even before the war started in February, Nigeria had been dealing with fuel and power shortages and high inflation. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja, Nigeria.
Machi Kuarizu started her baby formula business 6 years ago after quitting her former job as a medical lab scientist. She uses grains such as corn, rice, and brown wheat to make her recipes. She then packages them and prepares them for delivery. But because of Russia's war in Ukraine, she's not sure when she will get her next supply of wheat, and she says scarcity of wheat also is affecting the prices of other ingredients.
I use wheat alongside oats and then yam flour to produce that particular one. I wouldn't lie to you. To even get it is even difficult. It's not just about the increase in price. To get the wheat is actually difficult now because I buy in bulk. So I've made a lot of calls to some of my suppliers.
Orizu says with a key ingredient hard to come by these days, business has not been the same. She says she's beginning to look for other alternatives, even though she's concerned about her customers' preferences.
When you produce and you're not going to make your profits, it becomes a problem. It wouldn't be a business anymore. So I'm already trying to research on how to switch wheat for something else. What we have on mind for now is acha, that's fonio. Yeah, so I'm taking between now and Friday to make that decision.
Since Russia invaded Ukraine in February, grain prices have been rising steadily. At the onset of the war, the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations said the price of a bushel of wheat immediately rose by 5.7%. But even before then, the price of wheat in Nigeria had increased by about 30% due to shortages at home. The Wheat Farmers Association of Nigeria says local production of wheat here meets less than 10% of the country's needs. Nigeria imported an average of $2 billion worth of wheat in 2020 and 2021, mostly from the United States and Russia, according to the country's Statistics Bureau. However, the Nigerian Manufacturers Association, MAN, says grain shortages are not the only problem. Before the Russian invasion, businesses were already struggling with electricity and fuel shortages, inflation, poor infrastructure, and growing insecurity. Segun Ajayi Kadiri is the Director General of MAN.
It has made the supply chain internally to be very difficult. The most impacted part of the country also happens to be the belt that we get most of our food from. Apart from the fact that there's insecurity, the roads are also bad. We have had challenges. Now it is compounded by the fact that people cannot even farm.
Nigerian authorities blamed the electricity shortage on the collapse of the national grid multiple times since January. Authorities also said the recall in January of 170 million liters of tainted fuel from circulation led to fuel shortages. Many businesses like Usman Mohammed's bakery are cut off from power and rely on diesel fuel to power generators. But he says that too has tripled in price since the beginning of the year.
They will use a lot of diesel because the electricity is very scarce. So you need to buy diesel a lot. So it has affected our production and the price of the bread.
For now, many business owners like Orizu and Mohammed are just getting by and hoping for better days. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
In Cameroon, nearly 150 manatees, an endangered aquatic species, also known as sea cow, are killed each year by poaching or unintentionally by fishing. An aid group has created a mobile application to collect data to help reduce manatees' deaths. An Nzoonki reports from Lake Ossa, Cameroon.
Once a week, Annick and her colleagues from the African Marine Mammal Conservation Organization, or AMCO, go to Lake Ossa to collect data on manatees, a species classified as vulnerable by the International Union for Conservation of Nature. Using different probes, they learn the temperature of the water, whether manatees are still living there and how deep they are. Zanga says they collect the data to monitor the evolution of the environment, to monitor the impact of all this danger on the distribution of the manatees in Lake Ossa, and also to be able to anticipate these dangers. The manatee is an aquatic mammal generally living in shallow coastal waters. It can be found in the waters of the Cameroonian coast, such as Lake Ossa near the town of Dizangi. Unfortunately, the manatee's habitat overlaps with the fishing areas of local populations, leading to poaching and accidental entanglement in fishermen's net, which causes the death of about 150 manatees each year, according to data from Cameroonian researchers. While collecting data, the NGO also raises awareness among fishermen about the importance of the species, the threats weighing on it, and the legislation in force for its protection. Richard Ngola is a fisherman living near Lake Ossa. He says manatees used to be a very good food here at home. A very good food. Every month, for example, he used to eat manatees at least once. But he says this is no longer the case since AMCO arrived here in Dizangi, in Mevia, precisely in Lake Ossa, and made them aware of the problem. AMCO developed a mobile application for collecting manatee observations and made it available to fishermen who participate in a manatee monitoring network. When a fisherman sees a manatee or a trace of life such as feces, he takes a photo, connects to the application, indicates the location, date, GPS figures, and nature of the finding. The NGO analyzes and validates the information and then makes it public on the application's interface. Sylvain Ebok, the conservator of the Lake Ossa Wildlife Reserve, represents the local ministry in charge of wildlife. Ebok says the application allows the ministry to be sure that these species are still there. He says they are not going to protect a space just to protect it. They need to be reassured that what they are protecting still exists. So he says it is a good application. The conservation group says it has created a network of 156 fishermen who use the application daily. It is now in the process of expanding its work to other marine protected species such as turtles, rays, and dolphins. Anne Zwanke for VOA News, Lake Ossa, Cameroon.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Vasco Volares, thanks for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.